Is that fireworks?
I'm glad they're setting off fireworks. The Eagles just won.
Oh, okay.
That's why they're doing fireworks.
I didn't hear my mom scream bloody murder, so I didn't know. Go birds, I guess.
Go birds.
Wait, Jen, it's season two.
Oh my god, you're right. We gotta switch it up.
James, do the thing.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
I'm Maria. Hi.
I'm Jen. What's up, man?
Welcome back to Wood Beach Podcast.
This is a podcast where every other week we binge research a topic and report back to you.
And welcome to season two. What's going to be different about season two?
What if season two is just like we're binging false knowledge constantly? So we're just we're telling all lies this time.
Nothing is correct.
Nothing is correct. My research is actually me sitting eating a bag of chips and being like, I think this happened during this point in time of history, and it's totally wrong.
Here's my thing is I would listen to that sans chips because I don't want to hear you chew.
No. My research would be me eating chips, and I would write down my conspiracy theories, and then I would come to you.
Conspiracy theories. So
you
much.
Love my conspiracy theories.
I do. Jiminy Cricket, my guy.
I feel like we need to, like, talk more about, like,
I don't know what to say, though.
There's nothing to say. Fuck it. You know what? I'm happy to be back. I really missed sitting here recording with you. I missed doing research. I would, like, occasionally over this few months that we didn't do anything, mm-hmm. would get the urge to just, like, sit and type notes. And I don't know if that was because it had become so ingrained as, like, a thing that I do, or if mm-hmm. I actually wanted to do it. But I, like, found myself going to my computer and being like, okay, so what am I going to look up this time, you know?
I found myself collecting topics.
Oh, I never stopped collecting.
Of, like, because when I look back at our original, like, oh, we're going to do a podcast, we'll make a list of things that we're interested in. When I look back at that original list, I honestly, like, I still wonder about those things, but they're very, like, general and vague. And I'm like, I have no idea how I would do an episode on this, nor do I have the motivation to do an episode on this.
Mm-hmm.
However, since then, literally, like, I'll just be talking to Matt or my brother or my sister, or, like, those are the only people I talk to aside from you. So, my boss. Sure, my boss.
Right, right.
And they'll just say something and I'll be like, ooh, I gotta write that down.
Yep. Oh, I do it all the time. Dude, and I listen to a bunch of different kinds of podcasts, so I end up, like, taking what those podcasts are talking about, or maybe they'll, like, kind of mention something in passing, and I'm like, oh, I wanted them to elaborate on that. And, like, mm-hmm. I could do that. I can elaborate on that thing I want to know about. Well, shall we jump into it?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You wanna intro us? What are we doing today, Maria?
So normally, as I'm sure you're used to in season one, we used to do this fun little thing where one of us would tell the other one about stuff that we researched. Mm-hmm. And that's not changing. However, today, as our big, big comeback, we're both going to talk.
We're doing a combo.
We're doing a combo episode.
I'll take the pagan combo.
what would that meal be?
A bunch of rocks. Join on the side.
I fucking love eating rocks, dude.
I love eating rocks.
So I will be doing my section on the history of witchcraft.
And I will be doing my section on, and I'm going to tell you now, I guess everyone now, this is my thesis paper for no one in particular except myself.
I was very confused for a moment.
But my portion of this combo asks the question, why are more and more people turning to spiritual paths such as witchcraft when for a long time it was demonized?
I'm going to talk about the demons.
I'm going to talk about why they're back, baby.
So, should we just get into it, dude?
I want you to just jump right in, babe.
Let's just hop in on the history of witchcraft, as I am sure you are aware. Witchcraft? Historically not so good.
Yeah, it was demonized, as we mentioned.
Especially from the perspective of the is it fair to say the loudest religious majority of Christianity?
Vocal? Most vocal?
Vocal?
Sure. synonymous.
I wanted to just put religious majority, but I didn't know if that was factually accurate. But I do know that they were pretty loud.
Yeah. And well, you know, I feel like the loudest are typically not the majority. They are simply the loudest.
Okay. Well, then. Christianity did not like witchcraft. Let's talk about why. But first, how did witches come to be? If the witches of medieval belief were real, how did they gain their magics? Was it a gift from the devil in exchange for selling their soul and signing his book? Were witches completely falsified? Was every person killed in the many witch hunts and trials throughout history completely innocent? Many blame one of the most famous of the trials, those which took place in Salem, Massachusetts in 1692, on a combination of fungus, mass hysteria, and some truly twisted little girls. Regardless, the wart-nosed, cackling, broom-riding witches of theatrical interpretation had to come from somewhere. Whether they were real or not, how did they come into the public eye? First, we need to know what makes a witch a witch. Broadly speaking, historically, a witch is a person who employs magical entities, which may include powers from within her own body, to harm other people. So historically, a witch exclusively evil.
Right, yeah. Like, I'm gonna hex you, I'm gonna curse you, here's my potion to make your feet fall off or turn you into a frog.
Yeah. The pronouns she, her will be heard a lot. Mm-hmm. A witch does not have to be female.
Okay.
Traditionally, women were targeted, however.
I remember growing up, someone telling me, and I carried this for a long time, and I don't know if it's really true, but, like, someone told me that witches are female and warlocks are male. But I'm also like... But then you've got your non-binary, so where do they fall? Well, so I feel like witch is a better, like, encompassing
witches and
term.
Warlocks, that differentiation, I'm pretty sure, just comes from Harry Potter.
Fair enough. Maybe that's probably where I got it. I think my mom explained it to me like
they
that.
Are all wizards, but the girls right. are witches and the boys are warlocks. I'm pretty sure that was a Harry Potter thing.
Let's just stick with witch.
They don't have to be female, nor do they have to have a hat and a broomstick. That's not required.
That's not required?
No.
Do they have to have, a mole on their nose?
Here's the thing. They have to be ugly.
But beauty's in the eye of the beholder, so...
No, they must be like the dead. Cold, hard, and infertile. And above all, they must hate.
Hate?
A witch cannot have love in their heart.
Oh, no.
They must hate. The dead hate the living, and the witch hates as the dead does.
What?
There's no particular moment when this specific idea was formulated, but I think it's fun of just... In order to be a witch, you have to be ugly.
Okay.
You have to use magic to harm people, and you have to hate the living.
I need to know, who created these parameters exactly? Like, where the fuck, where's this coming from?
It's coming from all over the place throughout history.
So is it just people, like folklore kind of thing, where, like, they just kind of build upon ideas that are whispered down the lane?
It just keeps building and building and building. So early witches were people who practiced witchcraft. Using magic spells, calling upon spirits for help and to bring about change. Most witches were thought to be pagans doing the devil's work. Many, however, were just, they were literally just like healers and
right.
like wise women whose like chosen profession just people didn't get it.
I mean, yeah, because like back then, medicine took the form of just like herbology, basically. Mm-hmm. And
but
like,
if you were like an unmarried woman, just living out in nature, collecting herbs and like making tinctures and stuff, you're on the fringes of society and you're probably using magic and working with the devil.
Oh, and also, since you're not married, you're probably infertile and ugly.
Yeah.
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 And we bury the dead next to your house. So clearly you commune
with them.
Justice
for the spinsters, am I right?
Justice for the spinsters.
So witches are actually present in the Bible.
What?
They are mentioned in the Bible.
As witches?
I believe three times, yes. So in the book of Samuel, thought to be written between 931. Oh. I have number dyslexia.
That's
I think
fine.
There's actually a name for it.
Whatever it is, Matt definitely has it.
Well, Dad. Old Matt has.
Oh, that is a Freudian slip if I've ever heard one. Why are you calling Matt Dad?
We were just talking about dyslexia, were we not? But... The Book of Samuel was thought to be written between 931 BC and 721 BC. So this is early on. And in this book, it tells the story of when King Saul sought out the Witch of Endor, which does sound straight out of Lord of the Rings.
It does.
To summon the dead prophet Samuel's spirit to help him defeat the Philistine army. So King Saul goes to this witch and is like, yo, I need Samuel the prophet to help me out. So she summons Samuel because she's a witch and she could do that. And then Samuel shows up and is like, oh, Saul, hey, you and your sons are going to die.
Oh, in exchange, of course.
I'm a prophet. So you and your sons are going to die. And then the next day, according to the Bible, Saul's sons died in battle and then Saul took his own life.
Oh, shit.
So the prophecy came true. Other Old Testament verses condemn witches, such as Exodus 22:18, which says, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. I don't know what that means. I've tried to dissect it. So thou shalt not is like, don't.
Right.
And then suffer a witch to live. I think it might mean like, if you engage with a witch, you won't live a good life.
Or maybe it's like,
thou shalt not, like, suffer a witch is probably just like interact with a witch, and then to live would be my guesstimation is that literally means don't fuck with witches or your life is over.
Don't fuck with a witch, but a sandwich, you need food to live, so don't suffer without the food, i.e. the witch, get a sandwich instead. I love the look that you're giving me right now.
I felt like that wanted to be like a sponsor spot. Like if Arby's had contacted us, you would have spun that to be like an Arby's sandwich.
Don't suffer the witch, but enjoy the sandwich at Subway.
Where's the meat?
That was my plug. I forgot to tell you, we're being sponsored by Arby's and Subway.
No, here's the thing. I like saying where's the meat because it's neither. It is where's the beef and we have the meat. So by saying where's the meat, I am not infringing upon anything.
Where's the leak, man?
I just want to know where the meat is.
Where did you put it?
I just want to know.
You went shopping. You put it away. Where is it?
That is true. I did. Most of it is in the fridge. And then some of it is in the freezer because we just can't eat that much meat that fast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know how to read that. I think your interpretation is probably the most accurate. Mm-hmm. Do not, like, thou shalt not suffer the witch.
But yeah, there's additional biblical passages that caution against divination, chanting, and using witches to contact the dead.
Yet, in their time of need, we're like, yo, witch, can you help me out?
But
so it's bad until we need you.
No, but here's the thing: it's still bad.
Even back with the Solomon story,
with the King Saul, yeah.
Because oh, Saul, sorry.
He contacted a witch, and then he and his sons died the next day.
But was she just a prophet, and she just knew, or did she kill them? Because I got the impression that she just knew they were going to die because she didn't fucking
even,
war.
No, she didn't even say it. She summoned the dead prophet Samuel, and Samuel told.
Oh,
them
and
that.
Samuel knew. Yeah, okay.
But you got to blame the witch.
Oh, of course. She's a woman.
So
it's her fault.
Due to the often construed connection, not conception, we'll get to that later.
Oh, wow.
We'll actually.
We'll
get to that later. So due to the often construed connection with the devil, many believe that witches are purely a Christian invention. However, the idea of the flying witch who draws power from dark cosmic forces to do evil deeds unto others actually predates Christianity, possibly by centuries.
Whoa. Okay. I mean, that doesn't make... That's not entirely surprising.
Magical women forever, you know?
Ever present.
Ever present. In Homer's Odyssey, circa 800 BC, Circe, who turns men into animals, is described as a witch.
We know that name from Game of Thrones, Cersei.
Yes.
I wonder if that's where they pulled it. Okay, continue.
I don't think that character turns people into animals, but sure.
She's certainly evil.
She's certainly a bitch. The philosopher Plutarch refers to witchcraft in his treatise on superstition, circa 100 AD, and Roman law statutes actually featured illicit magic, although many of those early laws were actually against sorcery, which, unlike witchcraft, was seen to be beneficial, and which required special skills, tools, and words. Sorcery was more like, more comparable to, like, alchemy and, like, crystal magics and potions and stuff. Whereas, while they did do that sort of stuff, witchcraft was more so seen as you're only getting your power from
the devil.
The devil. Or from evil forces.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, because I thought the devil was, like, primarily a Christian construct. So if this predates Christianity, mm-hmm. but I guess the idea of evil forces was always present. Yeah.
Like, regardless of pantheon. In later centuries, Christianity was on what would yet to be identified as a witch hunt, because witches weren't really a thing yet. But mm-hmm. it turned out to be a witch hunt, in which they were seeking out heresy wherever they could find it.
Of course.
One place they targeted was actually the Western Alps, where the female embodiment of winter was depicted as a female figure often called Bertha, Percha, or Befuna. She punished social disobedience and rewarded goodness, but because she represented cold and winter, she was always portrayed as an old hag.
Huh.
And so because Christianity saw this woman with mystical power
right.
as an old hag, and they were like, that's heretic.
Of course.
Eventually, the heresy of witchcraft and the heresy of that figure melded into, well, a witch is an old hag. And then there are other things that happened that lended to that perception of witches being, like, old and ugly. There's a lot of different things that all add up into one thing. There's no singular
source. Again, because I think, like, witches, I feel like, are very much a folklore. And folklore mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily have its roots in anything concrete. It's just like stories retold and retold and retold. And the more you retell a story, the more it's going to change.
Exactly.
And you like, and eventually like everyone's going to get together somewhat in a circle and be like, well, I heard this. Well, I heard this. It's like, all right, let's compromise. You know?
Well, if you heard this and I heard this, then it must be a combination of the two. No, I saw a lovely young woman and I saw an old hag. Well, they must be the same individual. And it was actually an old hag who used the devil's magic to transform into a beautiful woman so that I would feel lust, which is a sin. We'll get to it.
Oh, no. This was the thing that you were talking about.
We'll get to it. Oh, we're my not God. There yet. You know where we are, Jenna? It's time. It's time for the elves.
Oh, my God. You and these fucking elves. Okay, wait. Real quick, guys. Maria and I were hanging out yesterday doing research together, right? And the amount of times she went, the fucking elves, man. I don't know what's with the elves. Like, she would not stop mentioning the elves and something else you're going to get to that I won't spoil. But it has to do with lust. What is with the elves?
It's the elves, Genevieve.
Now, that sounds like Lord of the Rings.
Thank you. I'm a voice actor.
Because it is.
I'm a voice actor. I can do all of two voices. Both of them suck.
You do way more than two voices. I'm not going to say they're good, but you do way more than two voices.
This is me being offended.
You sound really happy about it. Anyway, continue.
We're going to talk about elves as I swing my spatula.
Yeah, your stim spatula.
Don't call it
that. It's a stim spatula and you know it is. Ray just likes feeling up silicone. Doesn't matter what
it is. Don't say that either. It could be misconstrued. It is a spatula that is just, it's soft, and so I touch it. Shut up. Anyway, in 17th century, let's talk about the elves. In 17th century Britain, what we would now visit and see labeled as prehistoric burial mounds were these big old lumps in the earth, surrounded by superstition.
Ooh.
The people of the time just couldn't seem to comprehend the origin of the mounds. Villagers would see members of their community visiting these lumpy fields and wonder why. Were they simply out foraging, taking in the view? Or perhaps the weather was nice enough for nefarious deeds?
What?
That's a callback to me on this podcast when I said all nefarious deeds should be done in good weather. I'm really funny, and if you're a good listener, then you'll know that that was a really good joke.
I'm not a good listener.
Jenna has listened to it in person and also probably at least twice in the editing booth.
For sure. Wow, good callback. Yeah, good job.
Thank you, Nefarious Deeds. So
Wait. So this is a burial ground, right? And they're wondering why there's lumps.
So we would now see it. Like, current day, if we visited it,
uh-huh.
we would see these lumps in the ground, and there would be a fucking sign or a plaque or something that's like, these are prehistoric burial grounds.
Right. I don't understand why that's hard to figure out.
In 17th century Britain, they didn't know what prehistory was.
They were the prehistory.
They were, but no.
They were current history.
No, they literally were like, these are weird mounds in the ground, and they don't really have an explanation. And it doesn't matter if it's like, oh, it's just a lumpy field. Who cares? If they were just off into, I don't know, a regular ass field, it's like, oh, they must be like out foraging or something. But it's lumpy and mysterious.
So lumps maybe are mysterious. Up to something. Lumps are inherently mysterious.
If you feel a lump, get it checked out.
That's true.
So it's verbatim time. Are you ready?
Oh, you're quoting something now.
I'm quoting something. This is, what do you mean now?
That's not, no.
I thought you were calling me up for copying and pasting a lot.
No. I would never do that because then you would do it to me.
So, it's verbatim time from EnglishHeritage.org in the Journey into Witchcraft Beliefs article. Quote, should I do this in an accent?
No, absolutely not. Do not. No, don't do it.
Fine. I'll do it Mankey-zone-y. Can I do that?
You can do it Mankey-zone-y.
Among the girls in the village, it's whispered that if you come to this place at midnight on All Hallows' Eve, you can see the dead rise and ride along the road to the Market Cross. They can't pass the cross, and they stop there. It's unlucky to see them, but if you catch the eye of one of the riders, you might be able to win supernatural powers of healing and prophecy that will make your fortune. The vicar in the village tells you that the dead that remain in the earth are those condemned to hell. Some people say that the dead riders are wreathed in flames, and their saddles are red-hot iron. Those people say that if you do get any power from the riders, it's the power of hell and devils. But other, older people think differently. They think that the dead that remain in the earth are not demons, but elves. Among the lumps of rock is a beautiful, if sunless, land where the elves banquet and dance and entertain their favorite mortals. However, the elves are still dangerous, especially if crossed. The dead yearn for the lives they enjoyed, which means they might want to take back from the living. They remain where they were buried. Separation of self and body or soul and body may take months or years and may never happen at all to those who are destined to damnation. So the places where pagans buried their dead are especially fraught. The pagan dead are like nuclear waste. You can bury them, but that doesn't mean they're gone. Anyone willing to feed them on blood can hope to put them to work in a series of worrying deals. And this is where the familiar of the witch begins to take shape. Like the dead, fed on blood, and like the dead, malevolent. End verbatim time. So,
I'm gonna need a little bit of a summary, but yeah, what?
So these little girls, they see people going into the Moundy field, and they say that's mysterious. If you go there, it's a legend quest, legend lore, legend trip. It's called a legend trip. A legend trip.
Oh, is, okay.
Is that's what it's called when it's like, oh, if you go to this tree at this time, or
oh, like Bloody Mary kind of
yeah,
thing.
If you go to this bridge and you put your car in neutral,
a truck will show up and honk at you.
No. There's actually one like nearby to us, or like a popular one.
Oh yeah, it's the trees, right?
There's the trees, and then there's also the one where you like you put your car in neutral and you sit there in the dark and you like. It has to be like 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And then your car will like start moving and like it'll feel like it's been pushed. And then if you get out and you look at your back window, there will be like tiny handprints on it of the ghost children pushed your car.
Where is that? Because I've heard about, oh, what is it called? It's the run where Devil's Run, where all the trees grow away from the road. And if you go there at night in your car, suddenly there'll be a pair of headlights behind you, and it's this truck like racing after you and trying to chase you out or whatever.
Yeah, those are legend trips.
Those are legend trips. Okay, that's what you were trying to tell
me. Yeah. But in 17th century Britain, little girls would create this legend trip of if you go there at midnight on All Hallows' Eve, mm-hmm. you'll see the dead like rise, and it'll be a bunch of ghost riders. And they'll get on their horses and they'll ride into town, and then you can tell they're evil because they won't be able to like go past the Market Cross.
Oh, of course. Okay.
So, and then vicars are like, yes, that. And also they're so evil that they are hell beasts, and they are made of flames, and their saddles are red hot iron. And the little girls are like, if you see them, you'll get powers. And then the vicar's like, yeah, you will get powers, but those are the powers of the devil.
And then you're a witch
and you're bad. And then an old lady is like, well, I think it's just a community of elves.
So are elves...
I don't think that there's these little ghost men. I don't think there's these little ghost riders, Nicolas Cage and the such. I think, I believe, I know in my heart and soul, it's elves.
It's elves, I tell you.
It's elves under the ground, and they're throwing a little banquet, and they're doing a little dance.
But why? Why are they elves? Okay, but are elves synonymous with demons? I don't understand what's going on. Why do they think that? What is an elf?
Elves.
Just elves. Okay, I'm hoping you're going to tell me more other than the old people thought the mounds were elves and then move on to something else because I'm, like, real confused.
So, Jen, do you want to remind the listeners the gist of what we learned in regards to familiars?
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, man, you're asking a lot of me. Give me a second. So a familiar is traditionally thought to be a witch's pet, so to speak. It's usually takes the form of a cat, a rat, maybe birds, mice, lizards. But a familiar is just supposed to be a little creature that helps witches in their duties or whatever they're doing.
Duties.
Am I, was that helpful?
Yes.
Okay, great.
What you missed was that they are fed on blood.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's right. I think it was a thing they said that, like, the wart on the witch's nose or whatever was, like, basically the blood nipple for the familiar. It was, like, something real weird like that.
Yeah, and I don't like how you said it.
I don't know how else to say it.
Witch hysteria really took hold in Europe during the mid-1400s, when many accused witches confessed, often under torture.
Mm-hmm.
Within a century, witch hunts were common, and most of the accused were executed by burning at the stake or hanging. Single women, widows, and other women on the margins of society were especially targeted.
Right.
Between the years 1500 and 1660, up to 80,000 suspected witches were put to death in Europe.
Ugh.
Around 80% of them were women thought to be in cahoots with the devil and filled with lust. Germany had the highest witchcraft execution rate, while Ireland had the lowest.
Well, that's where they all were. They all fled to Ireland, and they're not going to kill each other like that.
So the publication of Malleus Maleficarum was a treatise that promoted the execution of witches based on theological theories of demonology. It was written by Heinrich Kramer, a German Dominican, in 1486, and was published in Germany in 1497. It was this treatise that likely spurred witch mania to go viral. The book, Malleus Maleficarum, usually translated as The Hammer of Witches. It was essentially a guidebook on how to identify, hunt, and interrogate witches.
Someone just fully making this up.
How-to, baby, it's a how-to.
I hate that.
It's witch hunt for dummies. So Malleus Maleficarum labeled witchcraft as heresy and quickly became the authority for Protestants and Catholics trying to flush out witches living among them.
Oh, I just remembered something. I'm so sorry. Do you think the brownies are done?
Oh, they are.
Do you want to take a brownie break? I was thinking we would do it halfway through between like yours and mine, mm-hmm. but I just remembered them just now and I got excited.
You want to take a brownie break?
I kind of want to take a brownie break.
Okay, let's take a brownie break.
Okay, great. All right, we'll be right back with bellies full of brownies.
Yay!
Hi, we're back.
We're back from brownies and ice cream. They were pretty good.
Yeah, that was great.
Hell yeah. So.
Yeah, we just jumping right back in. Let's do
Malleus
this.
Malleus Maleficarum.
Mm-hmm.
Labeled witchcraft as heresy. Quickly became the authority for Protestants and Catholics trying to flush out witches living among them. For okay. more than 100 years, that book sold more copies than any other book in Europe aside from the Bible.
I think it's true that the Bible is the most sold book still.
But which version? Probably the King James.
I hope not. I hope not. Anyway.
Here's where shit gets silly.
Oh, it's not silly already. You still didn't explain the elves, by the way.
Large monasteries.
Oh my god.
The 12th to 14th centuries.
The murderer.
Became preoccupied with the moral problem of wet dreams.
Oh my god, I was really hoping you'd say the moral problem of, you know, killing a bunch of innocent women. But no, wet dreams.
Wet dreams. Was it sinful to have a wet dream?
Are you asking my opinion? because no.
Well, monks thought so. And here's the, I bolded this. Remember yesterday? So yesterday, Genevieve was over at my house and we were doing our research together because mm-hmm. we're like super cute and quirky like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were doing our research and I, Jen, fully engaged in her own research, just chilling.
Sipping my tea.
Reading their shit, reading their stuff. And I'm sitting there reading my shit and I go, ew, no, what, no, why did they say that? Why did they say that? And Jenna went, say what? And I went, no, I need your reaction on recording.
Oh,
I can't.
Oh my God, yes, why, and I fucking hate when you do that to me.
Why did they say that? So I bolded it because it's a phrase that I didn't know could be said.
You look like slightly traumatized at the moment.
So monks reported that they're nocturnal emissions were often the result of being pressed or sat on by a human female figure.
That sounds like a band name. Nocturnal emissions.
I hate it a lot unless it's really good.
It's 100% like a punk screamo band.
Jesus Christ. Well,
so they have their nocturnal. God damn it.
That's all you can call it.
They have their nocturnal emissions because...
Is that the name of the episode?
Oh, no.
We come back for season 2 with nocturnal emissions.
Shit, man. Now it's on the list. I can't back out.
I have my document saved as witch seed.
Oh, no.
We'll get to it.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so... They have these emissions, and they're horrible for the environment, clearly. That's the moral problem, is that their emissions are killing the ozone. And it's due to a pressure on their chest, ?
It's due to a human female sitting on their chest.
Sitting on their chest, right.
Because that's sexy and makes them lustful. But they reported that their emissions were because of these women sitting on them. But women weren't allowed in the monastic dorms.
Yeah, where are they coming from?
So somebody was like, well, women aren't allowed in here, but we're feeling women sitting on us. So they must be devils that are capable of transforming themselves into these sexy ladies in order to tempt the monks into sexual sin.
But where are they gonna sin? There's no ladies around.
So this is, in part, the origin of succubi. Which is, succubi and incubi are sex demons, basically.
Yeah, male and female sex demons.
So further leaps of logic actually concluded of, well, why? If, of course, tempting a monk to sexual sin is already enough, but why else would these demons be trying to get these holy men to
kill the ozone layer. Why would they do that?
So they must have wanted to produce offspring.
With monks.
So the demons, they haunted monastic dormitories to, quote, steal human seed in order to impregnate women with demon children.
What? Why do you have to go to a monastery? Consent is sexy, incubi and succubi. You can't just do that.
Who would do this?
Who would do this?
Who could these such women demons be?
Oh, witches, obviously.
Well, this is when the Roman idea of the witch and her manifestation as the embodiment of winter in the Alpine regions catastrophically came together to allow the first generation of demonologists to decide that the exact identity for the recipients of the seed were the old, ugly, eccentric, outcast witches of the Witches' Sabbath.
I got it. Okay, so we've got the winter hag, the winter witch, the ice queen, right? That's our hag from the Alpines, right?
Yes.
And she doesn't like the monks' emissions because it causes global warming, so her home is under threat. And she's sending her succubi to the monastery. To save the climate.
I think I need you in the delivery room when I have a child so that I can breathe.
I'll just start telling you the most ridiculous bullshit.
I don't need like a birth breathing class. I need you to be fucking stupid in front of me.
And we'll make sure that you are breathing correctly.
Okay. Anyway.
So this, oh, wait, you didn't like that?
Okay. This idea, alongside with the ideology that the haggard old woman, like the standard haggard old woman, could not possibly naturally possess the fortitude to use magic to harm animals and humans. So that just added to the idea of the connection with the devil. And then inevitably, it added to the witch trials.
Okay.
So it was Malleus Maleficarum plus all of this idea of these demons and women making deals with the devil, mm-hmm. and trying to get one over on God.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Of course. So, as I have mentioned before on this podcast, Wonder Binge Podcast, you're listening to it, the full timeline, don't look at me, the full timeline of the renowned Salem witch trials can be found in season one of Aaron Mankey's podcast, Unobscured. Oh. So if you want, like, an in-depth exploration of the Salem witch trials, please check that out. We love Aaron Mankey over here. What if he, like, knew we existed?
Oh my god, he does not. But he doesn't. What if he did?
What if he did? What if he knew that the Mankey Zone was a thing here on this podcast? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you can absolutely listen to Unobscured to hear that. Look into it. If you would like for me to tell you about the Salem witch trials, please let us know.
Email us at wonderbingepod@gmail.com.
But, so, I actually recently, I am currently working at my alma mater as the scene shop supervisor for the theater department. And so, we hosted festival recently. We hosted a theater festival. And one of the shows that came to the festival was The Crucible, which is a straight play based on the Salem witch trials.
Right, yeah.
So I know a lot about the Salem witch trials. I've listened to Unobscure. I have looked in my own research.
I have been to Salem and
gone to the museums and everything. And so watching The Crucible, it was like very obviously like, yeah, they did research, but the playwright absolutely dramatized
he took creative liberties.
So the entire time that I was watching, I was like, wow, this is a great production. It's so incorrect. So if you know the story of The Crucible, those characters are real. That's not how it happened. And also Abigail was not in a sexual relationship with John Proctor because she was 11 at the time.
And he was like, what, late 30s?
Ish. I'm not entirely sure. Also, Giles Corey was not present for like every single conversation. They were like, Giles Corey's a great character. We're just going to put him like in this little girl's bedroom for this conversation. And he'll just be sitting there and be snarky and make fun comments. And I'm like, he wasn't present for any of that.
Ew.
It was weird. But,
I mean, you got to have, what is it called? Your comedic relief.
Yeah.
It's a dark story. So
yeah. Like, the entire time that I was sitting there, I was just thinking, I was like, if I could go back in time and like be able to just observe, because let's be honest, if I went back in time, I would absolutely be
you'd be a witch.
I'd be a witch.
Yeah, you would burn at the stake.
If I could just be like a fly on the wall, I would absolutely want to go to the Salem witch trials just to get the actual like account of what happened, because there's so many different interpretations, and I want to see what the fuck happened actually.
Right. And I feel like a lot of like dark history is swept under the rug. Yep. Therefore there's details missing. Yeah, so I hear you.
Yeah. So were the witches of the past real, or were they simply a scapegoat for horny monks and shitty neighbors?
Again, real quick, I wanted to comment on that. It's so sad to me that the monks felt so guilty about their own imaginations that they felt the need to, A, tell someone about it. Like, the fact that these guys feel so guilty that they need to, like, make up a reason as to why their brain functions normally as a human brain does, mm-hmm. is so sad to me.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think anyone should feel guilty about that, ever.
Well, back then, it was ingrained that any...
any kind of sexual desire was a sin.
Any, quote, sinful thought.
Right.
Was, like, damnable.
It's just wild to me. Like,
yeah. So there are some like very popular, or one of the most famous witches in Virginia's history specifically is Grace Sherwood. Her neighbors said that she had been killing their pigs and hexing their cotton. And so after a few more accusations, she was brought to trial in 1706.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the birth of the water test for witches.
Oh, if they float like a duck, they're a witch. And if they sink, like they're now dead. And yes. Not a witch.
Yes. So it was controversial even at the time, but especially now when you actually think about it. To determine guilt or innocence, Sherwood's arms and legs were bound and she was thrown into a body of water. And it was thought that if she sank, she was innocent, but also dead. And if she floated, she was guilty of being a witch and would very likely end up dead. Well, she didn't sink, and she was convicted of being a witch, but she wasn't killed. She was just put in prison for 8 years.
Wait, she didn't sink?
No. Really? Bodies are pretty buoyant.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's true. You just gotta know how to float on your back.
Oh, yeah. A satirical article, which was supposedly written by Benjamin Franklin about a witch trial in New Jersey, was published in 1730 in the Pennsylvania Gazette, and it brought to light the ridiculousness of the witchcraft accusations. And so due to this, as well as other people sort of hopping on that train of like saying how ridiculous it was, that is why witch mania started to die down in the New World. And then laws were passed to help protect people from being wrongly accused and convicted.
Thank God. Friggin' ridiculous.
Yeah. So the that brings us to the modern day witches of the Western world. They still struggle to shake their historical stereotype.
Also their hysteria. I mean, they're pretty traumatized.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, most of them practice Wicca, which is an official religion in the United States and Canada, and is a pagan religion.
Yes, it is.
Generally, Wiccans avoid evil and the appearance of evil at all costs. Their motto is to harm none, and they strive to live a peaceful, tolerant, and balanced life in tune with nature and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Many modern-day witches still perform witchcraft, but there's not really anything sinister about it.
I mean, witchcraft in itself gets a bad rep for all the reasons that you've listed before. Yeah. When, like, really, witchcraft is, like personal rituals, making tinctures, like... there really is nothing sinister about it at all.
Yeah. There's a 20th century collection of wisdom and witchcraft called the Book of Shadows, and that's where most spells and incantations are derived from. Honestly, like, when it comes to pagans and Wiccans doing spells and incantations, it is if you are looking at it through the lens of this is a religion,
yeah,
it is comparable to other religions praying.
Absolutely.
It's simply just another way of...
It's a form of prayer.
It's an act of prayer.
Yes.
And so a modern day witchcraft potion is more likely to be an herbal remedy for the flu as opposed to a hex to harm someone. That's not to say that modern witches do not make hexes. I personally would not say no to making a hex. But I've got some trauma. But
the coy tucking of the hair. I'm a little traumatized.
Just a little mom. But even those are often like just separation rituals of like cutting the cords between oneself and a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You, like, cosmically separate that.
Yeah, release that from your life. Yeah.
Today's witchcraft spells are usually used to actually stop people from doing evil or harming themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, while it's probable that some historical witches did use witchcraft for evil purposes, many might have just embraced it for healing and protection.
Yeah.
Like, even against the evil that they were accused of. Like, they were accused of being a witch and then did, like, practiced what could be considered witchcraft as a form of, like, trying to protect themselves and heal themselves from being accused, so.
Right, yeah. Who's gonna look, and they clearly did, but, like, logic says who's gonna look at a healer and go, you're evil, right? Because that's like what they're doing is they're doing personal healing. They're doing healing for others for the most part.
But how?
What's a miracle? Let's dissect that. What's a miracle?
Damn, son. Damn, son.
If not some sort of magical...
Fucking got him.
If not some sort of magical cosmic thing going on, and you might call it, you know, the hand of God or whatever, but like... It's still not very explainable.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we going with this, you know? Well, that was awesome.
Thanks.
I'm assuming you're done because you're looking at me like you're good.
I'm just excited to see how you connect what you did to this.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I real quick before we jump into mine, I was telling you about this yesterday, but I think it's worth mentioning again. I saw like a little social experiment that a teacher did in her classroom when she was teaching about the witch trials. And what she did, she gave all of her students a piece of paper, and she's like, okay, like, I'm going to hand out pieces of paper that say pilgrim or witch on it. So when you get your paper, keep it to yourself. Don't tell anybody what you have. And the object of the game was to basically create the biggest group of pilgrims without any witches in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, the students start pointing the fingers and saying like, oh, you must be a witch because X, Y, Z, and starting to like try and form groups against other people. And, you know, towards the end of the game, there were no real groups formed. Everyone was against each other. And the teacher finally said, okay, everyone reveal what you had. And not a single child had a piece of paper with the word witch on it. Everyone said pilgrim. And it just points to how quickly hatred spreads when accusatory comments are made, mm-hmm. when fear-mongering happens.
When there's a perceived threat.
When there is a perceived threat and the evil acts that come out of that. Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And like, that is so utterly prevalent in like our society right now, even just around the world, is like this fear mongering, this threat that may or may not exist, probably doesn't, or at least not to the extent that you think it does. Mm-hmm. But let's create another because it feels better. Because it feels like we are on the good side, whatever that means.
Yeah. And that's why, like, that comparison is so apt, because that's literally why those sort of accusatory situations that are still happening are referred to as witch hunts.
Yes.
They're not literally searching for witches, but that's, like, it's become, while it will always be connected to actual witch hunting and witch trials, the phrase witch hunt, the term witch hunt, has become an umbrella term for, it's like snipe hunting. It's
mm-hmm.
a snipe
it's to,
hunt.
It's
is,
to be is, hunting for something that does not exist.
Yeah, and a witch hunt is similar.
Yeah,
more mean.
It's and deadly, truly, yeah. And very toxic. Mm-hmm. It is a shame, and it's important to be aware of. Like, the psychology behind the witch trials, I think, is more important than the witch trials themselves. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's overlooked. I think we look at the witch trials and we're like, oh, wow, a lot of people died for a weird reason. It's like, okay, why did that happen?
Yeah.
And we need to think more about that. Because it's happening now. All the time.
Yeah.
But let's jump into my thing. Because we're gonna dissect that exact thing a little bit. I put this at the top of my page and I was going to mention it at the top of the episode. This is a fun little fact. Google is celebrating bubble tea today.
Today?
If you go to Google, the banner is like a little dog making bubble tea.
This won't be true when you're listening to it.
It won't be true when you're listening.
Oh my god, wait, that's so cute!
It's so cute, right?
Oh my god, I love him.
I love him too. And I want bubble tea.
Well, now I'm not going to be listening to you. I'm just going to be watching this little guy make boba.
That's fine.
Okay. Wait, there's a play button. I gotta see what it is. I'll watch it later. I'll watch it after.
Maria doesn't want joy right now. Confirmed.
I want the joy of you telling me what's going on.
Well, I will tell you what's going on.
What's the buzz?
What's happening? As I mentioned at the top of the episode, what I'm exploring today, my half of the episode, is why are more and more people turning to spiritual paths such as witchcraft when for a long time witchcraft was demonized? Because witchcraft has definitely made a comeback.
Yeah.
So while you just talked a whole lot about witchcraft specifically and mm-hmm. like kind of how it came about, for my section I'm going to be using the term paganism, and witchcraft would fall under paganism, like this, like Wicca falls under paganism. Mm-hmm. So for clarification on that, paganism isn't a specific religion. It's more of an umbrella term for nature-based practices, polytheism, but truly paganism just kind of encompasses anything that is not like a mainstream religion, which I will get to in a second. But
it's the counterculture of religion.
You could say that. You could say that. And I'm actually going to back that up in a minute. So like for myself, as an example, I consider myself pagan, but I don't subscribe to anything specific, and I don't believe in any specific gods or follow any like specific dogma. So I would technically be considered an eclectic pagan because I follow nothing in particular. I kind of just do my own thing.
Okay.
But it still falls under paganism because it's like I kind of pull from several different non-mainstream religions. Mm-hmm. And Wicca is often seen as synonymous with paganism, but Wicca is actually just one of the many religious practices that fall under it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just real quick, the true definitions of paganism and pagan, and this is a combined definition that I wrote based on Oxford and Merriam-Webster. Paganism is a religion other than one of the main world religions, such as Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, specifically non-Christian or pre-Christian religion. a modern religious movement incorporating beliefs or practices from outside the main world religions, especially nature worship, the beliefs and practices of contemporary religious spiritual movements based on ancient paganism. There's a lot there and it's kind of repetitive, but like there are points where I'm like, I want this part and this part, but I can't make a new sentence.
My brain malfunctioned halfway through that and I was just staring at you and not registering words.
Do you want me to do it again?
No, you're okay.
Okay.
I got the gist. I just like, there was a moment where it felt like it was speeding up and then it got like really fast for me and I was like, what's happening?
I've just like picked up the metronome. I'm sorry. I'll slow down for this one. The definition of pagan, it was used in the past by Christians to describe a person who did not believe in Christianity, a person who is not religious or whose religion is not Judaism, Islam, or especially Christianity, quote unquote, heathen. And they used the term pagan as kind of a derogatory. Mm-hmm. But we're taking it back, I feel like.
Let's take it back now, y'all.
one spell this time. But yeah, so today, my topic, like I said, is I basically made a thesis. This is my thesis paper.
Okay.
In bullet form, because I could not find, like, usually when I do research, the material is already there, right? Mm-hmm. I can pretty much look up exactly what I want to talk about. But I didn't see anything that was encompassing all of the ideas and thoughts that I had on this matter. So I'm kind of diving into this, like...
It's all you?
It's all me, yeah, yeah. So here is my thesis statement.
Okay.
Modern-day paganism is an attractive alternative, or an addition to, the practices of the main world religions, such as Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, because it offers more spiritual autonomy and flexible belief sets than that of the stringent practices and beliefs of many organized religions.
Okay.
That is my thesis, and we'll get into all of that now.
So really quickly, So is pagan anything that is not those big three, or are those big three just examples of bigger religions?
I think it's more the latter.
Okay.
I personally would not see a religion like Hinduism mm-hmm. as pagan.
Okay.
To better answer your question, not everyone who would like identify as Wicca would consider themselves pagan. Pagan is really just like, it's an umbrella term, okay. You know, and some people don't feel like they're standing under the umbrella, and that's fine. Like,
I personally don't believe in umbrellas, so.
Yeah, Maria refuses to use one.
I don't believe in them.
But some examples of like some neo-paganism or well-known folk religions are Wicca.
What does neo mean?
New.
Okay.
New paganism.
Okay. I thought it was the guy from The Matrix.
Oh, no. And actually, as I'm speaking through my notes, when I say pagan, for the most part, I'm referring to neo-paganism, meaning like today's more widely understood paganism.
Not those old heathens.
Not them old heathens, although...
Not them old heathens from the past.
Well, you can't say from the past because one of the neo-paganist religions is actually called heathenry. It's most prevalent in Germany.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we've got Wicca. They consider themselves witches. There's a lot of misconceptions about what goes on in Wicca. They are not Satanists.
Satanism is its own religion.
It's its own religion, which would probably fall under paganism, realistically. There's Druidism, which is very nature-based. It's kind of it would fall under like Celtic religions.
Druidism is what I'm interested in like looking into.
Mm-hmm. Me as well. There's Asatru, which is more of the Norse pantheon.
Okay.
There's a modern movement known as Rodnavery, or native faith, which is very prevalent in Poland. There's Stregheria, which is Italian witchcraft. Shout out to Sab, who practices Italian witchcraft.
Wait, Sab, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Sab follows more of a Stregheria.
Should I give them my Italian witchcraft textbook that I own?
You can certainly offer it, Sab. Do you want a textbook?
Do you want a textbook on Italian witchcraft with my aunt's notes in the margins?
Oh, we love notes. And then there is Hellenism, which is like focusing on the Greek pantheon, right. Greek and Roman, roughly. So those might be some things that you've heard about.
Mm-hmm.
And that would more or less fall under paganism. It depends on the person you ask. They may not identify. Not really the point right here. We're doing umbrellas right now. So what?
I don't believe in them.
Wait, can you just like pretend they exist for this right now? There's a lot of pagan rain going on.
Parasols.
You can use a parasol.
Go for it.
Okay. So what's with the pagan comeback? today.
Sorry. I heard that and I went, that's a comeback that a pagan says. Like, if you say something snarky, they give you a pagan comeback.
Some reference to a cool rock, I'm sure.
For sure.
So why is paganism coming back? Why is it coming back in droves today? Not really in droves, but it's here. In Douglas Winnell's article, The Rise of Modern Paganism from Tomorrow's World, he suggests that the seeds for today's brimming paganism were sown long ago when Christians began overshadowing other religions. In short, you can take the pagan out of the ritual circle, but not the ritual circle out of the pagan. Mm-hmm. It never really died.
And also, Christianity took a fuck ton from pagans.
And other religions as well.
And other religions.
Which I do talk about. There's a reason for that.
I was going to say, I would love to have just like a full episode of just Christian holidays and what they are based, like what they are actually like taken from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it would be a relatively short episode, but I feel like there's a lot of room for banter. Mm-hmm. So again, this thesis that I'm about to get into is based on research, like actual hard research that I've done. Some changes in our own society over the years, and then my own personal experience and that of my peers. And so these are the things that I believe, these are the driving factors that I think are popularizing paganism all over the world right now. Mm-hmm. My primary sources are Christopher Caldwell's 2021 article from the New York Times titled, Is the West Becoming Pagan Again? Douglas Winnell's 2019 article, The Rise of Modern Paganism, which I just mentioned, and Dennis Greensome's 2020 article, Pagan Resurgence, a review of Smith's Pagans and Christians in the City from the Institute of Religion and Democracy.
Okay.
Pulled very heavily from those guys. So the first thing that I think it was really driving the pagan comeback was actually the civil rights movement and counterculture.
Okay. Go off, King.
I'm not going to say that it started then, but I think this was like a big push into where we're at now. So if you think of like the civil rights movement and counterculture, you're thinking like, we're going to fight the man. Who is the man? The man is the government. Mm-hmm. Who is the government? Heavily steeped in Christianity. So if we're working against the government, we're also working against Christianity in that linear thinking. So with the women's rights movement specifically, several organized religions historically do not treat women equally to men. And that is true in many branches of Christianity where women cannot become priests or pastors. And historical religious female figures are frequently overlooked or entirely left out of the story. Mm-hmm. Really, anyone who was not white or male was pretty much left out of the story. And you know, people don't like that. They're like, yo, where's my representation? I want to know where it is. And sometimes it just feels easier to leave a group that is not going to, you know, uplift you than to try and change it. So they would naturally move away from Christianity into something else.
Which moving away, back then, moving away from Christianity was also considered moving away from the law.
Yeah.
Because history is steeped in theocracies, which is, I very recently learned that this never became a thing.
What?
Separation of church and state.
Oh, it was never true.
It was proposed.
It was proposed and it never happened.
It was never enacted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is very true. Yeah, a lot of our, like, moral normatives right now are, like, heavily steeped in religions.
They're theocratic.
They're very theocratic. I think it's true. I would say that it's true today that, like, you know, our society is not as theocratic as it used to be. Mm-hmm. There are definitely countries in this world today that have theocracies, like thinly disguised as democracies. But with counterculture, when counterculture was happening, that's like, you know, your hippie movement, your peace and love. I believe that they also paved the way for the growth of paganism because counterculture generally rejected things that the government praised. The government kind of referring to, you know, these heavily steeped Christian ideals. Mm-hmm. So they rejected consumerism, what they were expected to wear, who they were expected to marry, what job they were supposed to have, generally how they were supposed to live. They didn't really like being told how to do that. Mm-hmm. And young people, our baby boomers, were coming of age around the 60s. Vietnam War, civil rights movement, and they heavily craved individuality and freedom from societal norms. So they fought against
the man.
They're fighting against social expectations, but in peaceful ways for the most part. There were some violent counterculture groups, but for the most part, everyone was really chill and were just like, I'm just going to move in the opposite direction that you're moving. And social expectations, as we just discussed, were also heavily based in Christian traditions. So they're moving away from that. Counterculture explored and embraced sexualgebra. I love me some numbers. Actually, I fucking love data. Fun thing about me. I am a freak.
Jenna was almost an accounting major.
I was, and then I cried, and I went to theater. I don't know if that was a good decision, but I'm not unhappy. And I'm still crying. So counterculture explored and embraced sexuality, new ways of thinking, i.e. peace and love against the man, music, thrifted items and clothing, etc. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I do think that the civil rights movement and counterculture really like laid the groundwork for where we're at now as far as paganism being popular. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think is pushing us, like pushing more and more young people toward paganism, is sexual and spiritual freedom, which I just touched on a little bit with counterculture. So challenging the oppressive and stringent religious rules about sexual orientation and gender identity, as the counterculture did.
Mm-hmm. And still does.
You know, people want to be able to live their lives the way they want to live them. And if these mainstream religions are not going to accept them, well, they're going to leave. Mm-hmm. And they have. But anyway, so these oppressive ideas were built into society under legislation, you know, around gay marriage, discrimination laws, and all that kind of stuff that we're still dealing with the reality today. And, you know, just to speak to that, obviously, like the primary argument against gay marriage is the Bible said no, right? So clearly church and state have not been separated. And the same can be said when it comes to abortion and contraceptive rights. Many of the arguments against abortion rights are heavily based in religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And so from Dennis Greason's article, this is a direct quote that I'm about to read. For the immanentist, I had a hard time saying that word, and I'm actually going to tell you the definition in a minute.
Okay.
Actually, I'll tell you now so the quote makes sense. An immanentist is defined as any of several theories according to which God or an abstract mind or spirit pervades the world, the belief that the deity indwells and operates directly within the universe or nature. So that's basically anyone who believes that, like, God or any kind of divinity is, like, kind of around us.
Okay.
So, to quote, for the immanentist, sex is sacred only when it is free from all constraint, as it alone is the source of our truest identity. For the Christian, sex is properly meaningful when placed in its proper constraints in relation to God's good purposes.
Breeding,
yes, exactly. So, that's saying, like, marriage or sex is only condonable when it creates children. So, while Christians reject certain forms of sexual identity or any kind of sex outside of wedlock, most pagan religions don't care. Really, so to speak, like, there aren't a whole lot of rules around it. There are some branches that I'm sure have rules. I haven't dived into anything specific, but, like, for the most part, it's really like, be who you want to be who you want to be with, as long as it's all consensual. Consent is sexy.
Consent is so fucking sexy.
It's so sexy, especially if they're of age. Actually, only really when they're of age, I should rephrase. But yeah, so as far as spiritual freedom, within several organized religions, there is a spiritual obedience culture that I'm kind of coining right now. That says, like, do not question what is written. Our religion is the right religion, our way of believing or the highway, etc. So, like, it feels very, it's constraining, right? Yeah. And, like, I was never comfortable with the because I said so verdict on anything. And including religion. Like, if you're telling me to stop, I want to know why. You're telling me not to do something or to do something, I want to know why. And pagan religions offer essentially an open field of exploration without having to abandoned how you were raised. So it's like, this is actually, I kind of wish that I'd put this first, but I feel like paganism offers, like, a smoother transition out of a religion you may have been raised in, because it offers things like rituals that are akin to prayer. There are sacred symbols and gods that you can look to. So it doesn't feel like you're entirely abandoning the way that you were raised, just moving into something new that makes you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I think that's like one of the, for me, like, that is what makes it super attractive as well, is like, I actually really enjoyed the idea of prayer growing up. Like, I found a lot of comfort in it. I did for a long time find a lot of comfort in religious symbols, like a cross or a rosary. Mm-hmm. And I still have crosses and rosaries, actually. Nowadays, I don't hold them thinking like, okay, Jesus or Mary is with me. It's just like, this is kind of more of a touchstone, you know? Yeah. And a lot of pagan religions offer that exact thing in a different way.
Yeah.
Sometimes for me, it's hard to like hold a cross or a rosary without feeling like, I guess, the trauma sometimes mm-hmm. of like the way I was religiously raised. So I have to like put that down and find something new because I still want that comfort.
Right. I think I had an adverse reaction to prayer primarily because, first of all, it was repetitive.
Sure.
I'm sure there are thousands of prayers, but I only ever really said like four.
Sure.
And those four, I'm a very literal person and I always have been. And so I wouldn't view it as I'm communing or I'm opening myself up to the Lord or whatever. I would pay attention to the words I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And in those few prayers, it was always this figure, they are holy because they are chosen by God. Also, I as a human am flawed. So thanks for forgiving me. I hope I go to heaven. And that is every prayer I know, simplified.
Yeah. I don't know for sure, but like speaking to paganism from that, I feel like a lot of pagan rituals or prayers are more like based on yourself,
yeah.
so to speak. So like saying like, I trust myself, I am with myself, I am yeah. with nature. But again, like, and actually this is kind of moving into my next point. So like, you know, as far as like the smooth transition out of one religion into a pagan religion, a lot of pagan religions share similar like basic moral codes, such as like be kind and take care of one another, respect the earth and living creatures, and love and respect yourself, mm-hmm. which like are all beautiful, wonderful things, right? Like even the Christian phrases of like love thy neighbor as thyself, mm-hmm. absolutely beautiful. And that is also very true within a lot of pagan religions. Do unto others as you would have done unto you, but just really reworded, yeah. you know? And like, as far as like repetitiveness, I think the words really do matter. If you're going to say them over and over and over again,
yeah.
they have to mean something to you other than kind of what you just described of like,
I am flawed and this figure from religion is not. So they are awesome. Praise them.
Where,
it was
like,
very much not about me. And anytime mm-hmm. it was about me, it was about me being inherently bad.
Yeah, it definitely did sometimes feel that way. But with stuff like love thy neighbor as thyself, I'm on board.
Yeah.
You know, there's another one. It's like the righteous care for the poor, the wicked have no such concern. And that okay. has nothing to do with God, mm-hmm. Directly at least. I think it's a Proverbs thing. But yeah, it has nothing directly to do with God. So that helps me get on board with it. It's like, oh, to be righteous as a person, I will take care of the poor. Mm-hmm. And that feels like a more direct way to live
yeah.
your life. Actually physically live your life.
Yeah. The issue comes in when that is overlooked by those who are so focused on, well, God says this, the Bible says this. And mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, but the dogmas that you have sworn to live by are to be kind and to understand.
And you're not doing that.
And you're not doing that. You're putting this...
there's like a hierarchy you're creating. Yeah.
yeah. And you're putting this omnipotent, all-knowing, all-powerful being, which your religion is telling you to put above all else, and you are. And by doing so, you are, in certain circumstances, filling yourself with hate. And that's not yes. what you're supposed to do.
Right, yeah. There is, I forget exactly what it's called, but like, so certain like schools of thinking, specifically religions, operate on either a, like an X or a Y. So you've got mm-hmm. linear versus, vertical versus horizontal. Mm-hmm. So Christianity would fall in the vertical category because there is a hierarchy place where it's like, it feels like you are living your life trying to constantly move up the ladder closer to God who is at the top. Mm-hmm. But by doing that, you are putting others under you.
Yes.
And trying to like kind of build yourself up on top of other people. Mm-hmm. Where the horizontal thinking is like, oh, we're all on the same playing field.
Yeah. And even in pagan religions where they do have deities, I'm speaking purely from like seeing like witches on TikTok. It's like
yeah.
they will simply like put themselves out there to whatever deity wants to speak to them. And then when they are chosen, it's like, great. And sometimes people have multiple deities. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have multiple deities and they're all from different pantheons. And they interact with each other and they communicate through candle flames. While they themselves are gods, it's still like an even playing field.
Yeah, it's like this god is not better than this god and my way of thinking is not better than your way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Speaking of witches on the internet, on TikTok, another thing that I think is really like pushing the pagan movement is the internet. And here's why. So in the age of the internet, people have been more easily allowed to swap ideas, information, stories, opinions, feed pics, whatever. It's become really, really easy to do all of that.
I love when you just throw shit in like that, and it's so fun, and I know that your intention is to just keep going, and I never
I do absolutely not want you to let it slide. Well, really, it's a game for you. I'm like, is she going to notice that I said this? And then sometimes you do. But yeah, so it's basically the internet has made it easier to find your people, quote unquote. It's in a very attractive avenue for your own spiritual discoveries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're in the age of the DIY. I shouldn't even say that because like everything.
DIY was like.
That's how you survived. Well, here's the thing. Also,
like, it hasn't died.
DIY has always been a thing. That's why we're still existing today. Like, everything had to be done yourself. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean when I say like DIY.
It's an acronym and it stands for do it yourself.
Thank you. Yeah. There's a lot of DIYs on the internet about like how to create your own spells and spiritual practices from potentially a well-informed source, probably not, but like it's there and it feels like you can, it's a build your own religion. Welcome to Build-A-Bear, build your own religion. But I think being able to like make your own spiritual practices customizable makes you more likely to do them in a very conscious way.
Yeah.
So eclectic paganism, for example, is highly customizable, as I was just talking about earlier. And the internet makes it very easy to learn about pagan rituals, divinations, gods, goddesses, anything. Like you can look up anything. Like if I wanted to even become Jewish, I could look it up and figure out like what it means to be Jewish, at least from a text point of view.
Yeah.
If I really want to indulge myself in the culture, I have to go there physically. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you can learn about it and see if you vibe with it. But beware. But beware. This is my own plug against capitalism. So pagan culture, or at least from what I have seen, is highly susceptible to the promises of, you know, the lotions and potions. They're like, here, buy a million crystals. That's the only way to do your rituals and stuff like that. Of course, that is not true. You do not need any specific materials to make anything happen. But if you want to, go for it. But I do think... you know, pagan, this like rise in pagan culture has really made it easy for people to just sell kind of just shit, honestly, sometimes. So if you're exploring pagan beliefs, be careful what you buy into, like actually purchase and stuff like that. Even like from an informational standpoint, like be careful what you read and digest. Mm-hmm. Not everything is coming from a wholesome place, and that's with anything at all.
Yeah. For Christmas, I got Jenna a book on, like, bath rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally like, oh, if you're taking a bath during this stage of the moon, like, set these intentions and you can put these things in your bath water.
If you have them, right.
Yeah, if you have them. And I also got her, like, from the same brand, a thing of bath tea, which you brew it like a tea, but then you pour the water into your bath as opposed to drinking it.
Yeah.
And so when I was looking into that, there were a few different bath ritual books that I had seen. And I was very careful to like see what I could find about them and select one where it told you about the different like recipes, but then why this ingredient, what this ingredient brought to it. And it was very much like, these are simple ingredients you might already have in your herb cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Here's some essential oils. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't have everything, that's fine. And you don't need everything. It's simply a guide of, if you add this, this is the benefit. But you can still intent that benefit. You don't need a lemon slice. You know?
You don't need a lemon slice. Yeah. It is like heavily based in herbology. Like there are herbs that if you soak in them, they're good for your skin. And like, you know, there's the aromatherapy of the whole thing. But yeah, like you don't need them to get the effect or even the full effect. It's really the intentions that you set, which is all in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but like to that point, though, you know, while paganism has opened the capitalist door, it's also opened the door for artists. So like anyone who creates artsy tarot decks or oracle cards, any healing crystal jewelry, moon phase calendars. Like I just bought a calendar and each month is a new herb and it talks about like what it is and like its benefits. And here's a spell that you can use for like this month.
That's so pure. My calendar is sexy D&D monsters.
My therapist, we like came to the conclusion that I needed a physical calendar. I was like, oh my God, I want one that's going to teach me things. That's exactly what I bought.
Was and something I went, that will teach oh, me I things. Need a physical calendar. This artist that I follow is releasing a calendar called the Monster Manual. And it's like sexy pinup men, but they're all literal D&D monsters.
My favorite is still the owlbear.
My favorite is the Shambling Mound.
He's also very good.
He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah, so, like, there's... I would say that's a benefit. I'm someone who really values artistic talents. And yeah. I think, like, creating more avenues for that is awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Remember, you don't need everything to get a spell going. It's all about your intentions and your state of mind. But again, going more with like how the internet is affecting the rise in paganism. So the internet obviously provides readily available information. And the more you know, the more difficult you are to control. And I'm saying this not in an accusatory way, but like a lot of the mainstream religions worked very heavily in, you know, not providing enough information about things. Mm-hmm. Tons of like books that religions will ban, that entire countries will ban. They don't want their people reading them because that's information they don't want their people to have. Mm-hmm. There's a woman on TikTok who talks about certain books that have been banned for libraries for very silly reasons.
Yeah.
Like things that are really important, like talking about race, talking about children of divorce and how to get through it. Like there's a book also called The 48 Laws of Power, which is a long book about like basically how everyone around you manipulates you. And it is banned in several countries because knowing how you're being manipulated is the key to getting out of it.
And it even extends to things as simple as like your own human body. Our grade school education for like health class was you're gonna bleed.
Yeah, and that was about it. Yeah.
And that was about it.
This is very true. This is being talked about real time is the fact that a lot of Christian doctors and nurses are not being taught about IUDs and being taught about contraception. Like, so like, a Christian gynecologist fresh out of med school might see that you have an IUD inside of you and go, and literally they're like, what is that? But you're a gynecologist. Yikes. You should know.
Yikes.
But because they're coming out of Christian colleges, they're not being taught because Christianity doesn't believe in contraception. At least maybe that's a blanket statement because there are Christians obviously who use contraception, but like you see the point that I'm making. They're not being taught what they should be taught because of their religious beliefs. And I think that is a huge oversight. Mm-hmm. And that is a means of controlling people.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
1,000%.
Not what I had written down. I'm glad we kind of like went into that real quick. But what I was really getting at was the fact that if you don't have enough information about the world, it makes it easier for these like big established religions to other people, like we were just talking about. If you've never been exposed to this elusive other, then it's easier to hate them or put them below you. And unfortunately, many established religions would reject or at least look down upon whole groups such as like the LGBT community, any sex workers, drug users, and atheists, just to name a few. But yeah, so the internet has made it hard for religions to kind of hide those types of things. The information is there and we will access it. Yeah. My last but not least point of why paganism is pervading our culture is just the historical cycle of power. As we know, Christian evangelists heavily shaped our modern world, as far as like societal and governmental structure, moral prescriptions, and cultural norms. And many of these things that Christians brought forward, in my opinion, were very good. For example, during the time of paganism in Rome, with like the Roman god, the Roman Patreon.
Oh, also Patreon.
We don't have a Patreon.
Pantheon. Oh, we do have a Buy Me a Coffee, though.
Oh, that's cool.
I'll plug that at the end.
Sick. So during the time of paganism in Rome, there was a lot of sexual freedom, but with that came the absence of, or I'm sorry, I read absence instead of obscene, but with this sexual freedom, There was an obscene amount of sexual abuse.
Right.
Even towards children. Actually, even like particularly towards children. Mm-hmm. And Christians were fighting exactly that and trying to protect people from rape. And they did this primarily using monogamy and sexual abstinence for single people. Infanticide was also painfully normal in ancient Rome. And as well as just like plain old murder. Like, so Christians fought this norm of infanticide and just murder in general by insisting that we are all made in the image and likeness of God. So if you're killing a person, you're killing God. And that children are gifts from God. So the murder of a child is the murder of a gift from the beyond. So, like, thumbs up. I would say that was a good move. You know, like...
Thanks, priests.
Thanks, priests. Like, I'm glad they were able to curb rape. I'm glad they were able to curb infanticide and homicide. That's awesome. But what was originally meant to keep people safe has unfortunately... And I think this is just normal, has become oppressive. I think it is human nature to overcorrect.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that I would argue that that has happened. But my point here that I'm making is that there is time and place for certain ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. Christianity served its purposes, speaking out against what they found wrong. And I think we are the better for it for the most part. And now pagan and secular culture is doing the same. They're speaking out against what they think is wrong, trying to probably eventually overcorrect, but you need to correct at some point, right? Mm-hmm. And what that overcorrection will look like, who knows? But if we never try to fix what we think is wrong, it will never get fixed at all. So those are my big 4 points, right? I'm going to close with this. So I'm
this
asking...
This is my favorite TED Talk.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Also my thesis statement to get into whatever college. So I'm going to present the question, why is there seemingly a war going on between pagan religions and established religions? So in Christopher Caldwell's 2021 article from the New York Times that I mentioned at the top, mm-hmm. he discusses a book called La Fin de Chrétienté by Chantal Del Sol, which is translated to The End of the Christian World. And that book discusses how, like, when Christianity began to take hold over Rome, they did so using what Del Sol calls normative inversions, quote unquote. This means the phasing out of the old into the new in a slow and methodical way. And this is why Christian holidays heavily resemble pagan traditions, because they were slowly phasing out of paganism into Christianity, but they had to do so by, like, slowly and methodically disguising it.
So is it Christians seeing pagan rituals and adapting them, or is it pagans switching to Christianity and adapting their own stuff?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I think it's both. I think, I'm sure people in Rome who were practicing paganism, there had to be a fair amount who wanted to switch to Christianity. But to speak to what we were saying earlier about, like, that comfortable transition, that's how they did it. That's how they comfortably transitioned into this new religion from, you know, generations of the old. I think it was also Christian evangelists taking from what they're trying to change to methodically change everyone. Mm-hmm. So in this article, in Caldwell's article, he basically poses the question, so, like, gay marriage, right? Mm-hmm. If we are rejecting the social norms of a straight marriage, how come gay couples want to still use marriage? Why not create, like, a whole new ceremony, a whole new system instead, and just reject the old? Well, it's because of normative inversion. Mm-hmm. It's basically making gay marriage normal.
It should just be marriage.
It should just be marriage. Yeah, like, just say marriage. Like, you know, it's, I think it's easier to slowly change a societal norm with these normative inversions. Mm-hmm. To just fully throw something away and make something new, I think it has more opportunity to be rejected by the whole.
So to throw it away would just make it, like, sorry, rejected?
So here, let me rephrase.
I'm sure it made sense to the audience, so just rephrase it for me. I'm stupid.
So you and I want to get married, right?
Love it.
Let's do it now. So you and I want to be together in some sort of bonded ceremony, right? Uh-huh. Well, we know marriage. It's a heavily religious ritual. So if these religions are rejecting our marriage mm-hmm. because it is gay, why would we not just be like, fuck it, we're going to go do our own thing, create our own new ritual? Why do we want to use the old ritual? Because we want it to be normal for gay couples to get married. And because like our society is set up for like married couples to get like certain benefits, be seen certain ways, and gay couples want to be seen and treated in those same ways. Mm-hmm. So it's an easier transition to use old rituals than to create new ones.
Gotcha. Okay.
That makes sense?
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm just stupid.
You're good.
What you originally had was great.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure you were confused for a reason. So these normative inversions happened back in Rome when Christians were phasing themselves in, phasing pagans out. Nowadays, Christians are seeing that happen to them, but in the inverse. To quote the article from the New York Times, "Today the Christian overlay on Western cultural life is being removed, revealing a lot of pagan urges that it covered up."
Ooh.
To put it more plainly.
I like that sentence. Thank you. Did you write that?
I did it. That was Caldwell's article.
Good job, Caldwell. That's a good sentence.
That was a good one. It's good soup.
You should have taken credit.
Nah. I don't want to get in trouble. But to put this quote more plainly, the hold that Christianity had over the U.S. and many European countries is seeing a similar transition where they're being phased out and losing power real time. But the world is ever changing. New ideas, new discoveries, new problems, and new solutions will consistently change the world and how we live our lives. The world was never meant to be one way, nor were humans. But I personally think that makes us beautiful and interesting.
Yeah.
So I think truly what we are seeing, to wrap up, I guess, truly what we are seeing with this rise in paganism is just a transition. And I'm very excited to see where it takes us. And I'm also, like, very curious to see how we will have overcorrected.
Yeah.
And what we'll need to come back in to overcorrect in a different direction. But yeah, that was my thesis. What did you think?
I really liked your thesis.
A+, maybe?
Part of me is like, let's just cut my half.
Oh my god, no!
That was really good.
Thank you. I spent way more time on that than I meant to because this was my brainchild. This is seriously like what I just talked about interests the shit out of me.
Yeah, I can tell.
And it's both a little disappointing, but kind of exciting to see that I couldn't find like solid research on this, because every article that I looked up was more just talking about like when the Christians took over Rome and now Rome is back. It's like, that's not what we're talking, like that's not what I want to know. I want to know why. Backstreet's back, all right, but like what else? It's going to be May. I want to know when May's coming and why.
Here's my really fun thing when it comes to these references is I was also going to say bye, 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 because you did that earlier, but I do not know
if any of those are in sync or not. Or Backstreet Boys.
I cannot tell the difference between those two bands.
In Sync was Justin Timberlake, right?
That doesn't help me.
If you don't know, then I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, none of the articles were talking about, like, basically, like, the psychology behind why paganism is becoming bigger and bigger. And that's what I want to know.
Okay.
And this is why I think it is happening.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. And the more I look into this, I'm sure my like big four will change, if not in order, but maybe entirely. But I think this was a good starting point.
You know what's crazy is sometimes when I'm like leading an episode and I'm telling you stuff, I feel so fucking smart. And then the second you start teaching me something, I become such a himbo. I'm like, yeah, that's a great point. Also, like, priest cum, you know what I mean? Like,
asterisk monk cum.
Asterisk monk. Am I right, brother?
Oh my god. Well, I had fun. I don't know about you. We had brownies and ice cream in the middle.
I know, it was good.
That was a great time.
Listen, all I'm saying is, you can follow us everywhere you find podcasts at Wonder Binge Pod. It's providing us with topic suggestions. and feedback and just saying hi. You can comment on anything. You can message us on Instagram and Facebook at WonderBingePod, as well as emailing us at WonderBingePod@gmail.com. If you want to support us and give us suggestions on what can make season 2 extra special to you, we do actually now have a Buy Me a Coffee. BuyMeACoffee.com/WonderBingePod. It's really, really, really simple.
I love that.
Or actually just /WonderBench, not WonderBingePod. But you can like support us and say something nice.
And guys, thank you for everyone who came back to listen. This is really special to us. Like, I'm just so happy that anyone is listening to us at all. And I'm really excited for this upcoming season.
I've missed
doing this. Missed
us. And I've missed you guys, honestly.
I'm so happy you're home. It was 3 months of torture for both of us, I think. It was definitely rough. The amount of times I was like, I'm going to go to Target. I'm going to call Maria. Oh, wait, she's on the other side of the fucking country. Thank you guys for listening.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. You're overdoing it. Oh, wow. Do you need help?